In this episode of The Critical Myth, The Critical Myth crew covers the latest genre TV news from the past week, and then remembers the better days of Defiance. It's episode 476, Inexplicable Decisions.
With episode 476 of The Critical Myth, I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I've been trying to figure out where I'm going this week, and all the maps say there be dragons.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and yes, packing the week before Labor Day always makes my suitcase look extremely weird and odd, and I hope TSA really doesn't search.
And this is Brunson from Australia, and it can't be too expensive to get, extra baggage, right? Right? Guys? Why are you laughing?
It's a little known fact, Bronze Thumb, but the Winter Soldier actually had two arms until he tried to take a flight from Russia to the Americas, and they just lobbed one off as part of the baggage fee. Yeah, that part, I think, got cut out of the film.
Yeah, on the floor.
Is that right? Because he like a novelty metal arm.
Yeah. Well, what can you say? The duty taxes on that are pretty severe. So, yes, we are all preparing in our own ways for, as of the time that this episode goes out, just a couple days from now, we will be descending upon Atlanta for Dragon Con. Yeah, so, I'm sure that if my bag gets searched, it will be an interesting conversation, to say the least. But there we are. I think that's true for just about anybody going down there, so there'll probably be 60,000 different stories about that at a minimum. But first, we've got a lot that's going on as we are getting towards the end of the summer season and towards closer and closer, crawling towards the fall. We are getting a lot of these little news blurbs about various programming decisions, casting decisions as shows are getting ready to unveil. And we're just going to go ahead and jump into some of that because, as Brunstam mentioned last week, his internet connection is relatively new and still somewhat unproven. So not a lot of chance to catch up on shows, and frankly, there aren't a whole lot of shows to catch up on right now. So we're going to go ahead and start here with, this is a holdover from last week, it is an article about Sci-Fi and their slate of 2014 fall programming. And let's see, what's the first thing it says here is... Well, this is something that a few of us are going to be looking forward to. On the 11th of September, Haven comes back for its fifth season. And this is the much ballyhooed 20-episode-long fifth season. So who else is looking forward to that one?
Oh, me, definitely. I mean, this is a show that I was slow to pick up on early on. And in the last few seasons, it's been getting better and better and better. The decision to finally start confronting a lot of the mysteries that were built up has, paid off, and they've been able to keep the show running even with the big mysteries revealed, or at least somewhat revealed. I still have more mysteries, which is fine. Give me new ones and keep the show going longer.
Yeah. I like how the article still says that it's based on the novella The Colorado Kid from Stephen King. At this point, can we just all admit that's no longer even remotely true?
I was going to say it was someplace somewhere.
I think that
around.
Was barely remotely true from the beginning.
I know, but now it's even more ludicrous. Let's see. Also in September, there is the premiere of a new series called Z Nation. In this show, 3 years have passed since the zombie virus has gutted the country, and a team of everyday heroes must transport the only known survivor of the plague from New York to California, also known as The Last of Sci-Fi.
Damn it, you got there ahead of me.
Oh, well.
Oh, geez, I thought this was like some sort of French film. Okay.
if they cast Josh Holloway as the lead, I'd be happy.
Yeah, you would be good.
Well, there is a Lost...
No, but for completely other reasons.
Yes, everyone, check Ron Stump's Facebook, and you'll see his reference thereof. But no, Harold Perrineau, however, is going to be on the show, so there you go. At least one Lost alumni. But yeah, this kind of seems like a mashup of The Walking Dead and The Last of Us to me. I don't know. We'll see how that pans out,
I suppose. I don't expect it to be as hardcore as either of them.
No. No. It is kind of weird. This must be the show that DJ Squalls or DJ Qualls moved on to.
Yeah, DJ Qualls is a sailor.
Yeah. It's too bad, you know, he wound up getting bitten by a werewolf just to be written off and sent into Zombie Land. It happens. Oh, wait, Zombie Land is a different thing,
yeah,
right?
That's something. Yeah, that's something. Yeah, they're not making that show.
No. All right, in October, oh, here we go. Unleash the snark gate here. The 31 Days of Halloween, which of course includes, well, here's a series that I don't know that we need. Town of the Living Dead. If we already have Z Nation, this seems a little bit insular to me, but that's all right. The colorful folks of Jasper, Alabama are determined once and for all to complete their zombie movie. 30, whatever, that's supposed to be 3 days dead, I guess, but it's ridiculous the way they spell it. Based on an urban legend, their film centers on a group of friends trying to survive a zombie apocalypse in rural Alabama, as one would expect considering it's set in Alabama. It's going to follow the crew of filmmakers as they struggle against every obstacle imaginable to get a final cut of their film. This...
What the part that scares me is that they said series.
Yes.
Well, the thing that scares me is that I read that for the first half of this, I thought, oh my god, this would be hilarious. And then I get to the end, it's like, the production company is True Entertainment from The Real Housewives of Atlanta, season 25, Oprah Behind the Scenes. Hang on, is this actually a reality show?
I don't know.
I think it's the zombie movie.
If this is a reality show, it's going to be horrible. If this is a comedy, like it's a really, it's actually quite a clever idea.
This is like a really self-aware, like parody of a reality show. It seems is the way it's reading. But then you look at it in the like you said, the production company is one that does reality TV. So either they're making fun of themselves, or I don't even know.
Or they're just trying to get two bits of content for the price of one by having people make a rubbish sci-fi movie, and then record it and make a show about making a really rubbish sci-fi movie.
But I think Gary's point is valid. This sounds like it would be a funny joke for the length of a movie, but a series? I don't know. As if to comment on that in the very next part of the article... Ghost Hunters is coming back for its 10th season.
Who are they coming back with? Didn't a bunch of people leave?
I think that they're actually going to be hunting the ghosts of the people who left the show previously.
Well, that is an interesting twist.
that could actually happen by this point. 10th anniversary and its 200th episode.
Anybody can make... Anyway,
200 episodes. Let's just all wrap our brains around that for a moment.
Okay. Gets 13. Yeah, okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'll let it go sometime.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. There's also an original movie premiere, Dark Hall.
Zombies?
A team of secretive guardians transport a deadly creature and its half-human sister to a secure location, but the beast escapes and threatens to fulfill a prophecy by destroying the world.
Of course it does.
Of course it does, yeah. The prophecy can't be that, you know, he's going to bake a birthday cake or something. Yeah. It's got to be destroying the world.
It's going to be a rainy Friday. Yeah.
There's also Finders Keepers. A child becomes obsessed with an evil doll left behind by the previous occupants of her new home. This must be premiering around the same time as that Annabelle movie. That's the only thing I can think of. Because it's basically the same plot, isn't it? But
sounds it.
Whatever. That's sci-fi for you. Okay, and then we have something I think is a little bit more interesting here, and this is the miniseries Ascension. An ambitious original drama following a covert space mission launched in the 60s that sent hundreds of men, women, and children on a century-long voyage aboard the starship Ascension to populate a new world. Halfway into their journey, as they approach the point of no return, a mysterious murder of a young woman causes the ship's population to question the true nature of their mission. Interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure where they're going with it.
Well, I've heard a lot of good things, I'll just say that. But it does seem like a fairly... guarded description, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I seem to feel like I've read science fiction novels from about 20 or 30 years ago with this sort of premise, and most of those turned out pretty well. So if they're taking that as inspiration, it could be surprisingly good.
Possibly. It doesn't specify a particular book or anything that it may be based on, but
I don't think this one specifically was, but I know this sort of generation ship meme was very popular for a while.
Right. I seem to remember Greg Bear writing a few novels along those lines, and Gregory Benford and so forth.
Yeah.
Let's see, and then finally the last original movie premiere. This one is probably a shocking topic based on the title Mutant World. I wonder what that could be about. A group of doomsday preppers emerge from their bunker 10 years after an apocalyptic meteor strike, only to discover the world is overrun with crazed mutants. Are they referring to themselves in this case, or... No? Okay.
Are they going to be dirty people wearing rags? Are we going to have huge brains? What I mean...
Yes, both. People with huge brains wearing rags. That's what I see. So, yeah, I don't know. There's, other than Ascension, for me at least, there's not a whole lot here that is... well, no, I shouldn't say that. Haven at the very start and then Ascension down towards the end. There's not a whole lot that's really jumping out at me as a huge draw. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, no.
I think the Z Nation might have promise, but given the people that they have in it, I don't know how it's going to pull off. So,
It's just very derivative. It's not just a story that we've seen before, but that we just immediately jump to, two examples of shows that are doing the same story, like really well, not necessarily right now, but sort of very recently. It seems like. For that one, they would have to pull something really amazing out of their, out of their hats very quickly in the show for us to be impressed.
Yeah, I would say so. Well, let's move on then to our next topic here, which I think Gary, I'm intrigued as to your thoughts on this one. Star Wars Rebels: Spark of Rebellion is going to be available online the 29th of September, but then the series itself is going to premiere on October 3rd. And so this, I would imagine, is the kind of sort of in canon follow up to Clone Wars.
No, not at all.
Okay. at least spiritual successor, anyway.
Yeah. Oh, that I do agree. And the head guy for this show is the same guy that did Clone Wars, Dave Filoni, and he did great work. And I hope that it's as good. However, I get a sense that this here Rebels is going to be sort of less plugged into the Star Wars universe than the Clone Wars was. Not saying that they're going to use main characters in this either, however, but it's going to be much more standalone from what I heard with just cameo type of things.
Go ahead, Bronson.
Yeah.
Well, what I've been hearing is that they're going to set up stuff for Episode 7.
Yes, I've heard that as well, which again sort of means it's not plugged in, at least in my opinion, because...
Which is really weird, since it's been pretty much from Inception... said to be set between episodes 3 and 4. So unless it's like supposed to be very much retroactive foreshadowing, which is
but I've heard rumors that 7 is going to have a lot of, without jumping too far around, is going to have in a sense flashbacks into it too. So it might fit. But the thing that Bronson is going
sorry, you go.
Well, I was going to say the thing that Bronson's talking of, and I think Edmund read the disclaimer, and if not, we'll spoil everything, so if you don't want to hear Star Wars stuff, pause or go ahead. Anyway, they're going to introduce the villain for Star Trek VII in the Rebels, or at least the premise of them. So I think that's the link that you're talking about, John. Wow. So it should be somewhat interesting. They're, what was it that was said? They're something like the equivalent of a Sith hunter, but they're not actually Sith, so they're going to have... from what I've read, they're going to have Vader sort of having a flashback with Darth Vader in the actual movie with these characters that they introduce in Rebels.
Disney is super keen to have – is reportedly super keen to have Darth Vader around in shape or form in pretty much all the Star Wars stuff that they can.
They'll just have, for no reason whatsoever, just have people in the future movies, many years after the fact, cosplaying as Darth Vader in some kind of odd sense.
No. They'll pull a Pirates of the Caribbean, where like the end of Episode 7 or Episode 8, it'll be a friend who's going to help us out, and down the stairs walks Darth Vader, and he's suddenly a good guy.
Yes, there you go. There you go. That would be a Disney type of thing to do, unfortunately. All right. Well, let's see. Just kind of parsing through it here. Yeah, it's...
And it also, just as a side note, it is all different type of animation than Clone Wars, so if you're expecting that same look, it will not be. They are bringing in a whole different crew of artists, and they have different sort of stock ideas for what characters should look like, so it will be different. Not quite as bad as the original Clone Wars for those people who go really, really far back, but definitely nothing. It won't be a carbon copy of the ongoing series either.
Okay. Let's see here then. Completely changing into other things. Here's some shows that are either coming back or being created. First one here, and I'm basically going in the order that they parsed, that they kind of spooled out throughout the week on the various news feeds. The Strain. I don't know if anyone here is watching this. It certainly seems a little too icky for me, but it has been officially renewed for another 13 episodes, second season.
Yeah, I have been watching. I watched the first few episodes, and then was having a bit of a downtime recently. And but I have been enjoying it, and I've also been intrigued in terms of some of the comments of people have had, that a lot of the people who have read the books have been telling some of the people who are having troubles in the early episodes to hang with it, because there was stuff being set up that that would definitely pay off. So I'm definitely going to stick with it to see what they're talking about.
Hmm. Interesting. Speaking of books that are then made into TV shows, this one is a little bit bizarre. Keanu Reeves is coming to a TV show. He's going to produce and star in an action series called Rain, based on a book series by, I guess it's Barry Eisler. So this, John Rain is a Japanese-American assassin who makes his killings look like natural deaths. Okay. Didn't he have a movie where he basically played that character recently? I don't know. Is anyone even familiar with the source material at this point?
The foggiest.
No. Nope.
Yeah, this does not sound particularly promising. I'm surprised that they did not tap him for the next topic here. NBC is apparently, talk about really digging deep into the unnecessary files here, developing a TV series based on the film The Devil's Advocate. Again, why they wouldn't just tap Keanu Reeves.
Not to be confused with the French television series The Devil's Avocat, which is about the devil going on a vegetarian diet.
Only for one day, though.
That might be more interesting than this. Although, okay, so obviously those who remember, it's The Devil is basically a high-powered attorney.
Yes.
Yeah, it was about as thin as that.
Yeah, well, and most notably, and was primarily notable for, you know, it was Al Pacino chewing the scenery as the devil, and if the TV show doesn't have that going for it, I can't really see it going anywhere.
I'll say this, if they get Ray Wise, then I'm in.
Okay, okay. The project is being produced by John Wells, who is known for The West Wing, obviously, and, well, I doubt it's going to be quite on par with that, but... Ray Wise could make a good devil. It would actually be a nice callback to that one show that I'm failing to remember right now.
Reaper?
Which one? Reaper. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Although, given the fact it's NBC, we don't necessarily hold your breath, since it was also announced this week, I believe, that that Emerald City series, it was going to be the dark take on the Wizard of Oz and actually bring some of the darker Frank Baum stuff from the other books in, they've decided to can before it's even aired.
It was canned before it even started production, which is fairly impressive. That's now Fox and NBC that have pulled this one off. The two networks that are vying for last place right now.
Yeah.
These are two of the networks are actually doing worse off overall than the CW. Just pointing that one out. Which is interesting. I mean, we've said before that the networks that were already harried by the cable networks on top of it are now getting a lot of competition from places like Netflix, Hulu. Now Yahoo Screen is kind of doing their own thing, particularly with Community. But then also the game console makers are starting to get into the fray little by little. And Sony's big kind of reveal was a show based on the comic series Powers. And I guess they have started casting some people for that. Charlton Copley, I believe is the way that you say it. It's the guy from District 9, if I recall correctly.
Yes.
Yes, he is going to be the lead on Powers. And also on the show is going to be Michelle Forbes, which of course we know from just a ton of genre shows. Most recently, Orphan Black, of course. She was revealed towards the end of that second season. So previously, what is it? We have Eddie Izzard is on the show. Susan Hayward is on the show. So they're getting some fairly well-known names, at least from the point of view of the genre.
And not just well-known names, but good names.
Yes. Yeah, they're not getting like, you know, and brought to you by Yui Bowl or anything like that. That would be catastrophic. So I don't know. I'm fairly interested in this one. I know that that Powers was shopped around to a lot of networks over the last couple years. So for it to kind of land in Sony's lap, especially ironic when so many announcements were made from Microsoft that they were kind of bringing up their own TV studio and then essentially shuttered it with only one project still out there, that being the Halo series. This is still very intriguing to me because it would be interesting to see how well this works for them. I would hate to see this project go the way of, say, you know, Hieroglyph or Emerald City, that's for sure. Well, just to take a slight detour into the absurd, let's go here to this next... since we know so many people that listen to the VOG Network also are not the biggest sports fans and really don't care when the Super Bowl comes on, we have an alternative for not just the Super Bowl, but the whole football season. Hallmark Channel has announced the first ever Feline Football League. Yes, the FFL.
That's good, because that puppy league needed competition.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but I'm just waiting for the first fantasy feline football leagues to spring up now.
Yes. Yeah. I'm sure that this will get plenty of attention from people. It's already gotten the dog's attention, as perhaps some of you can hear in the background.
I'd just like to applaud the network there for thinking that they can put a bunch of cats in an arena and they will do as people want them to. Dream big, guys.
Have you ever seen their like puppy bowl or kitten bowl shows before? They're special.
Well, I was just hoping that the Hallmark Channel would bring back more Babylon 5 actors into series, but I guess that's not happening.
This is what they can apparently pay for, but there we are. At any rate, that look forward to that, those of you who want to watch kittens for hours at a time. And I'm sure there are many people that will.
Well, it's for the cat audience, John. It's not for
me. They're adorable, so... A little bit closer to our home, the tech home anyway. Halt and Catch Fire renewed for season 2 by AMC.
By a whisker.
I particularly like the fact that the press release is first put into binary.
Yes.
that's nice. And then it goes into the usual thing. I wasn't hearing a whole lot about this show, but I guess they were doing well enough to get a second season.
Yeah, I was watching, and it was kind of intriguing because similar to the late and very unlamented Low Winter Sun, AMC's attempt to launch a series last year, had some growing pains. It was having some issues in the middle, but managed to get things together towards the end of the season. But luckily for them, unlike Low Winter Sun, which didn't really come together until the final double episode that was shunted off onto a Saturday because it was obviously not going to make it. They managed to pull things together with about four or five episodes to go. So I think it was the strength of that final run which got them the nod in the end.
Mm. Gary Bronstam, either one of you. Well, Bronstam, I know you haven't had an opportunity, but Gary, have you caught this at all?
No, sir, I have not.
Okay. Well, there's another show that I think that we're all going to look forward to catching, and that's the second season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And we've already heard some interesting things about that and some casting going on. Well, here's some more. They've cast Adrian Palicki.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how you say it.
I know, right? As he, for those with a little bit of background in the Marvel Universe, cast as Bobby Morse.
Yes.
A.K.A. Mockingbird, who has, of course, in recent years been very much involved with S.H.I.E.L.D. in the comics. So this makes a whole lot of sense. And not in this article, but in another article when they were showing it, they actually had her face next to the way that Mockingbird is currently depicted, and it actually worked out pretty well. What I find kind of funny is that she's been in the genre kind of in and out. She was, of course, in the Wonder Woman pilot a few years back. But go all the way back practically 10 years to the very first episode of Supernatural. And who played Sam Winchester's ill-fated girlfriend? That's right. So, there you go. She's graduated up to S.H.I.E.L.D. Hopefully not part of HYDRA, of course. So, yeah, look at who they've got coming. Kyle MacLachlan, Lucy Lawless, lots of people.
And yeah, lots of genre people. You know, they know the audience that they're going for, and they're unabashedly going for it, which is sort of interesting. You know, you get the talk with movies where they try to open it up so it's more of a broad spectrum thing to appeal to people. But it seems more and more in the S.H.I.E.L.D. series that they're more than willing to go right for the geek.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and last weekend, after we recorded the past week's worth of shows, we watched Captain America, Winter Soldier. It was the first time for the family, anyway.
I rewatched it in the last week or so as well. So that's...
yeah, and I was and I had the fun of watching them react to, you know, the two big reveals. First of all, the identity of the Winter Soldier, and then the reveal of the true nature of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the jaws hit the floor, and. At one point, my wife just kind of looks at me and goes, but they renewed the show. I was like, yes. You have some catching up to do.
Want to watch it now?
Yeah, exactly. Very different show after the Winter Soldier, that's for sure. Here's some information that I'm sure, Edmund, you're going to be very thankful to discuss, and that is two shows coming back for Showtime for their third seasons. The first, Ray Donovan, okay, yeah. But then Masters of Sex.
Yeah, no, although...
Just warning, guys, that one's not about what you think it is.
Ray Donovan?
Yeah, I know. You'd think that that one was a lot more interesting than it is. But no, we've been covering Masters of Sex this summer since its return for the second season. And, yeah, we've had to say that a couple of times.
Yeah.
But at any rate,
certainly I'm certainly happy the Masters of Sex is coming back. Once we get into... episodic stuff. I have been having a couple of reservations now, but still happy to see it come back. And as I think I mentioned when we were doing the season previews, yeah, Ray Donovan, I wasn't too high on it after the first season, and basically dropped it after the first episode of this second season. So
it's that's funny, because I actually picked it up about. And it's something my wife enjoys watching, so it's one of those things where, you know, I take it for the home team, but it's kind of predictable and violent for violence sake, and the storyline is pretty plodding. I want to refer to it as a poor man Sopranos, but I really don't want to insult Sopranos that way, because I don't feel that this has that sort of overarching sort of plot line or thought put into it where it evokes the emotion that Sopranos did.
Hmm. All I can say is that all I know about Ray Donovan is that Fios commercial or whatever that they run around here, and that's probably better than the show actually is, according to some people. Not to be outdone by NBC and their ambitions to bring back The Devil's Advocate as a TV series, Steven Spielberg, having done his magic with Falling Skies and Extant, is developing a series around his film Minority Report. Yeah.
Wait a minute. You know, if
you are being watched, the government has a secret system. I'm a psychic
that can predict when you're going to commit a crime. Yes.
Yes. Here's the problem. How is he going to incorporate some really cheesy and irritating family drama into this particular concept? That's what I want to know.
He's got the
precogs. No. It's the precogs are going to be office drones.
No, they're
like,
all
after a
hard
day.
Live with the precogs.
After a hard day of predicting murders, they go home to their families, and it gets all cutesy. And because they're psychics, they can also predict little things. Like, you know, just...
They pass the salt before you ask.
Yeah.
That'll be
I can already see a really cheesy opening credit sequence in my head.
I'm sorry. Two of them pass the salt, the other passes the pepper, and they... Aw.
That's when you know there's trouble.
Right. It'll turn out that John Anderton's three sons, are the precogs in this particular version of the show.
And they're all under 10.
That's right. Again, I'm sure we're going to have that, because what has been the kind of weakness of every Steven Spielberg TV show that we've seen, that they've inserted this kind of stuff in there. So we'll see how this works. I mean, obviously, the concept was pretty good. The film worked in and of itself. I kind of question coming back this many years. I mean, it's been, what, 12? It'll be 13 years probably by the time that this goes. It's a little long, but okay. We'll see how that works out. But not to be outdone by either NBC or Steven Spielberg, we have what has to be one of the more, well, creative spin-off ideas I've seen in a long time. ABC is developing a TV series based on Castle's Derek Storm novels. Yes, the novels referenced... Bronstone, maybe you can explain this better, because I know you're familiar with Castle.
So, the premise of the pilot of Castle is that Richard Castle is a selling mystery writer who has gotten fed up with the character that he's been writing for the past 10 years, Derek Storm, and has decided that in this book he's going to write his last Derek Storm book by killing the guy off, because he's just sick of writing it. He wants to sort of start writing something else, despite the fact that everyone and their pet dog is telling him, dude, you're making so much money off this. And then while he's looking around for sort of like something new to write about, he gets roped into a police investigation because some stuff from his books turned up in a murder scene, and he becomes so enamored with the detective who's investigating the case, who is played by Stana Kartik as Detective Beckett, that he decides he's going to write his next series of books about a character based on her. And so gets, because he's very rich and connected and stuff like that, gets permission to basically like follow her around. Mm. That's the pilot.
Okay. So what's interesting, of course, is that since Castle became a hit, they've been publishing Richard Castle Derek Storm novels.
Well, no, they've published some graphic novels of the Derek Storm stuff that they reference within the show. But
there's actually been novels as well.
Well, no, the novels that they put out were the Nikki Heat novels, which is the character that's based off Detective Beckett. There's been like two or three. And they've come out in real life roughly around the same time as they've come out within the show. And spoiler alert, they're not very good.
Well, yeah. So I'm kind of then just kind of, this is a very strange way to do a spinoff. Especially when you look at it here in the description, is Derek Storm is a spy who helps the CIA with secret missions. Well, as generic descriptions go, that's pretty generic.
Well, I think, part of the thing, like in the show that they comment is the fact that like the books that he writes, like, you know, they're best selling and a lot of people enjoy them, but they're really not high art by any stretch of the imagination.
So let's make a TV series around it.
There's a reason why the show is about the author of the books and his relationship with the woman on who these new books are based, rather than the
books themselves.
Yeah, the books themselves. It's just, yeah.
This just has disaster written all over it, unless I'm missing something really, really, yeah.
Maybe they're going to go tongue-in-cheek, who knows?
Maybe. But even then, I feel like it's a series that's based on what probably is a nice TV movie concept.
An episode.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, like a very special episode. They get an extra episode that season, so this is what they decide to do with it. So
you know, Castle hits his head and has this dream.
I see the pilot script writing itself right here. Let's see here. Oh, this was some interesting news that kind of blew up all over the internet the last couple days. Mythbusters. Carrie, Tori, and Grant are leaving the show.
Leaving is a nice word.
Yeah. You want to kind of...
Well, I mean, I don't... I just like everybody else, you know, there's very little that's been put out on this, and perhaps, you know, it's being respectful, and we should honor that, but they did not leave by choice. They didn't say, we want to move on to new ventures, or, gosh, you know, it's just not fun anymore, so let's not blow up this, you know. Either their contracts weren't renewed or they weren't asked back. Mythbusters, while doing well, I still don't believe is getting the ratings it was a few years ago. So I'm guessing budget-wise they're scaling back a little bit, or as I think Adam said, going back to their original model. So you know, it's what brought them to attention first. But these three people have become such an integral part of the show, and in some instances have carried the whole show, have done quasi spinoffs like Pumpkin Chunkin' and some one or two a few Robot Wars episodes, that it's sad to miss them. I think they capture a part of the audience that that the older guys, no offense to them, but don't get, and some of the younger kids aren't interested in them. Some people like a little cheesecake and see Carrie as that as well, and they're going to lose that out too. The mustache just doesn't work for most people, so I think they're going to lose a big chunk of their audience by not having these people. I think it is these people are what help build their audience, and moving away, I don't see how they'll keep the ratings up. I think they're going to really alienate, might be too strong a term, but just not interest other people. What do you guys think? I mean, my kids, I really think, enjoy watching them and them enjoying what they're doing more so than, you know, say, like Adam doing something.
I think that, for me at least, having the variety of people on the show kept it from getting dry. It was part of the reason why the show broke out beyond its original fan base, was that they built upon it. To go backward seems to me like a network-driven desperation move. That's just kind of my gut reaction to it. Bronstam, I think you were about to jump in on your opinion, or maybe I just heard some kind of strange noise coming across the microphone.
It's a little from column A, a little from column B. I think you hit the nail on the head. I've never been a religious watcher of MythBusters. What I've seen of it, they would use, you know, they had an A team and a B team, and that essentially meant that they could do more things in the space of an episode. They could have some variety. They could sort of appeal to different crowds and whatnot. It gave the show a broader audience base and broader content. And losing that is, you know, yeah, it's going to shrink the content back down to, okay, we're only really going to get, now we were only going to give you sort of one kind of thing at a time. And if that's not your cup of tea, well, you don't have something else within the show to kind of hang out for. So I think it's more likely, I think this is going to hurt them in the long run. It's going to be more people who preferred the kind of thing that the B team were doing, or preferred their dynamic or whatnot, are just going to switch off.
Hmm. Yeah, I think it's a they're trying to make this as positive a situation as they can, and I'm sure that the three departing team members were kind of asked to be as generous as possible, but the way that things are being phrased, definitely I agree with Gary. It sounds like they were told to leave versus volunteering to leave, and that just tells me that the network felt like they couldn't continue to justify going the way that they were going, and this was the easiest way to do it, and that was the way that they kind of read the demographics or whatever focus groups they maybe were working out of, but who knows. We'll have to see how that works out, but to be honest, MythBusters has been going on for so long that they've been trying to sustain themselves with kind of special event episodes anyway, so they've already been having their quote-unquote jump-the-shark moments along the way. In fact, that would probably be one of the more ironic and self-aware final myths to bust, would be, can you, you know, actually do that with the leather jacket on? But at any rate, last story here is a collaboration between BBC America and BBC One. A new drama series, 6-episode series, The Living and the Dead. It's a historical piece set in the late 1800s in England. It is a man working on investigations into hauntings, paranormal happenings, and ghostly visitations as encouraged by the Society for Psychical Research, which was an actual thing. So it'll be interesting to see if this is kind of a mixture of fiction and history, as a lot of these shows tend to be. This feels like it's almost in the same vein as some of the other shows that BBC America and the BBC have put out there. I'm thinking something like Ripper Street and so on. But I guess for a 6-episode series, it doesn't sound particularly bad. I mean, it comes from the people who made Life on Mars.
Yeah, exactly. My only hesitation is, I mean, they did Life on Mars, Ashes to Ashes, and then Eternal Law. And my sense was that Ashes to Ashes kind of, in my mind, I know there's some people who were perfectly fine with the third series. I felt lost momentum, and Eternal Law didn't quite capture the same magic. So I would hope this is more a return to form rather than hopefully not a continuation of decline.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, BBC America's last venture was Orphan Black, was it not?
Yes.
So who knows? Maybe they can help spark the magic themselves. All right, well, we have a little bit of time left here, and it's probably just enough time to get into the one show that Franston was able to keep up on, and that was Defiance. So before we do that, just to make it official, we should have done it at the front, but changing things up. Edmund?
Certainly. Those who haven't figured it out from Gary's little oblique mention of it, we like to talk about just about anything when we talk about these things, so you will most likely be horribly spoiled if you haven't already watched them. But we always try and leave you a week to do that, so we hope you've rushed out and done so.
That's right, and we're going to go ahead and talk Defiance, so here is the promo.
Stop insulting me! I know that you lied about killing Kenya Rosewater.
Something wrong with your memory?
We have to figure out what happened the night you disappeared.
I didn't need her dead. I needed her under control.
No! Defiance, all new next Thursday at 8, only on Sci-Fi.
All right, and Bronstone, why don't you go ahead and do the honors of the recap?
I could probably do that. Defiance Season 2, Episode 9, Painted from Memory. Doc Yule works to keep her dark secret from coming out.
Okay, and what would you give this one?
I give this one a 5.
All right. And Gary, did you happen to watch this one?
No, I didn't catch up on this one, but given Bronstom's 5, that might have been judicious.
Especially since I weighed in with a 6. And Edmund, did you catch up with this one either?
I did, and I think I'm going with the 5 as well.
Yeah, Skip's a good one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, you can imagine how thrilled I am. This is the thing I'm up to date on.
Yeah. Yeah. Good call. I'm a 5. All right, I'm not even going to argue with you. Can you summarize what was missing from this episode? And we'll try to chime in as needed.
I don't know. I don't know how I'd describe what it's missing. It's really easy to describe what it had. It wouldn't be nearly as long. It just completely dropped the ball on what to do with, okay, we're bringing Kenya back, and we're going to, you know, they bring her back, and they bring her back in this particular way with this particular plot device. And you use that, this kind of plot device for this kind of story that by all accounts seems like it's just going to go nowhere. Like, it just seems like this episode was such a waste. My comment that I put on Facebook like about 15 minutes into this episode was that what would make a much better show was if it was Nolan and Arissa on like a Jeremiah-esque road trip post-apocalyptic adventure.
Hmm.
That I would watch, because mm-hmm. those two are probably my favorite characters. And then characters like Daytac and whatnot are... just feel like they're trying to be in a different show.
They are in a different show.
From the beginning, it's just like half the cast thinks they're in Game of Thrones and the other half think they're in Bonanza. and the show is never quite meshed. It's never quite bridged that divide. And then here they've got the opportunity to do something cool and sci-fi, and they just totally screw it up. They use it to bring back a character, but in such a way that apparently. Like she's going to die in 3 months. And while I don't doubt that we'll see this version of Kenya back, it's like... It's just a dumb way to do it. Pulling the trigger on having, like, you know, conspiracies and people's plots being exposed and whatnot and just, like, you know, with the Doctor and the Mayor and all that sort of stuff like that, to do this seems like a waste. Like, you'd think you'd save those kinds of reveals and those kinds of story beats for something that was more important.
Yeah, well,
and then when, oh, sorry, what?
No, I just wanted to say, I mean, what got to me about this as well was that it was just such a clumsy and ill thought out plan, and it also completely undercut. I mean, they've been building up you all over this season and a half, and even Pottinger, there've been intimations of what a great tactician and strategist he is, and it just made them look foolish.
If there was some kind of hint that there was more to this, then maybe I could embrace it a little bit. But the feeling that I got was that it's the same problem that we've seen for the last handful of episodes. They're marking time until they can resolve the whole Ariza Irdu possession thing, and they're just taking their time with that because they want to spill out until the season finale. And in the meantime, they are trying to find things to do. In the basically, the previous episode and this one is nothing more than a completely unnecessary side venture that threatened to undercut the first season finale and everything that Stama had done. Thankfully, it wound up not doing that, but in the process of salvaging that, it essentially revealed that there's no point at all to Kenya coming back. At all. There's just literally no point to it. And that just seems just bizarre to me. I was watching it, and I remember that I got to the end of the episode, and I really felt like maybe this should have been, like, halfway through the episode. Like, wait, and she's just leaving? Like, they built up to this revelation, and I was like, great, now what does that mean? It means she gets on a train. What? Just fell flat for me, and I was the one that actually gave it the higher of the scores. It was still 6, but Edmund, what would you add to this?
If they are trying to build up to Arissa's army, both in the previous episode and this one, I'm feeling absolutely no suspense about this crowd of people up on a bluff looking out over Defiance that was supposed to, I think was supposed to be this sort of ominous development, and it's like, oh yeah, okay, so they're up there. Fine. Not really sure what they're doing, and I'm not really feeling much sense of danger. But maybe I will eventually. But I'm not really expecting to at this point.
Well, yeah. I don't know how to interpret the fact that after this, the last 4 episodes of the season, they're spooling out 2 at a time. That's usually a bad sign. But that said, we also saw that they are preparing to premiere the 5th season of Haven on the same night, just about, a week or 2 later. So I don't know if maybe it's just to help clear the decks for their schedule or what. But yeah, I'm just the season started off so well, all things considered. I don't know what happened these last
'cause
it
was
episodes.
Nolan and Arissa on a road trip, sort of.
Well, that and they were actually. If the cast of Thins actually thought that they were in Game of Thrones, they were actually kind of going in that direction. They were owning it, and then they just kind of fell into this other stuff that's going on. But at any rate, not easily the lowest scored episode of Defiance this season. And in fact, if I go to our little record here, I'm very curious to see if it's the lowest episode of Defiance yet. And does it have that distinction? It, in fact, has that distinction. That's not a good sign. All right. Anything else that we want to say about Defiance right now, or do we want to just hold off until
I think they could have pulled this episode out of the fire if they had written some good stuff for this version of Kenya, the idea of her, really grappling with the idea of I'm not who I think I am, what am I? But instead, just as soon as she realizes that she's not a human and not the real Kenya, she's just like, okay, I'm not a human, I'm not the real Kenya. Feels like there's no... They just completely skipped over what would have been a good opportunity for drama. And this episode, instead of being a complete, cluster, could have been a an interesting diversion for a good character story.
Yeah. Well, this season's been on a sharp decline since around the 5th episode, Put the Damage On. Since then, it's been 4 episodes of steadily declining fortunes. So hopefully they can pull this season out of a tailspin here. What? Now, look.
Someone has strong feelings.
Director Fury, I understand. We want to know what's in their wallet, but we'll just have to put that aside for right now. All right, I think we've said enough then on Defiance. And Bronstone, thanks again for joining us this evening. And
thanks,
we'll see you in a few days.
Yay!
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under the Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, watch, read, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.